Welcome to the RG Sports Show. So glad to be posting on the podcast. It's been so long. We're talking playoff basketball, the start of it anyway, right? This first playoff game, and let's dive right into it. We got the Blazers, we got the Grizzlies. I don't know how I feel. I think it's easy to say the Blazers are going to come out and dominate just the way Damian Lillard's been playing. Nurkic is finally healthy for a playoff run. This kid, Gary Trent Jr., shooting out of his mind. CJ McCollum, the dog, playing through the fractured back. Carmelo Anthony, questions of him whether he could play in the league anymore. Boom, here's 24, here's 28, here's 30. So that's the easy way to go, right? But we got to give this Grizzlies team credit. They could scrap. They could fight. I don't know much about head coach Taylor Jenkins, but he has his handful in trying to scatter this lineup around and make it a competitive game against the Blazers. I think that's the goal tonight, right? The goal is to win and to give them another chance, because the Blazers got hot and stole the eighth seed from the Grizzlies. So now the Grizzlies essentially have to win two to advance into the playoffs. They got to win tonight to force the ultimate elimination game, right? Because it's technically a best out of three almost, but it's a one and done if the Blazers win tonight. So let's get into the lineups. We got, for the Grizzlies, we got Ja Morant. We've seen what he's done all season. Just athletic freak. Amazing in picking it. Like, one of the better young players that I've seen in pick a role in a long time, right fresh into the league. Whether it's a dribble handoff, a straight pick and roll. And he's getting decent at shooting when guys go under it. And that's so important because he's so athletic. If you go over it, it's almost a two every time. You go over it, you know, it's on Ja Morant to make or miss it. There's really only so much you could do if you give the lane to him, because he finishes so well. But they have Dylan Brooks at the two. Streaky shooter. He could get hot. Plays hard. I think he's like 6'4", 6'5". But, you know, just a streaky shooter. Plays hard. Kyle Anderson has one of the uglier jump shots in the league. If you haven't seen him play, you know, I watched him a lot when he played for the Spurs. A good system guy. I just hate the way his jump shot looks. He could hit it, but if I'm the Blazers and yeah, I don't mind him taking some jump shots, because it's just like, oh God, tough to watch. Here's the big question mark. Anthony Tolliver at the four. Me personally, I like Georgie Dang. I probably would have preferred him. And this is just a predicted lineup that I see. Who knows? They could put Georgie Dang in there. They could go small ball and maybe start Grayson Allen, who's been shooting out of his mind in a bubble. And then Justice Winslow, this is interesting. I see him on here. I don't know if I've seen him play for the Grizzlies. I think I seen the trade was, because it was like a three-team trade where they acquired him. They acquired Georgie Dang from the Minnesota Timberwolves. But he could do some things defensively that really could change the game. I mean, he's a great defender. And if any of you who are listening have seen him play for the Heat, you know what he's capable of. I mean, I think they got rid of him there because he wanted to play point guard, and there, you know, that was the whole thing, the battle there with Dragic, who's been the point guard there for a while now. But he wanted to play point guard. But honestly, he was the best defender they had before Jimmy Butler. If we're being honest, the best defender on the floor, scrappy, getting steals, athletic. It would be interesting if he makes an appearance strictly to harass Damian Lillard, because we're seeing Damian Lillard he's just excellent in the pick and roll right now. You go under, it's automatic three ball. You go over, yeah, we know what he could do in the lane, his passing ability, the 1-2 pass, the extra pass that Nurkic is going to make to find Gary Trent, McCollum, or Anthony, right? So you're talking about a guy who could fight through screens long enough to contest Damian Lillard. I would be really interested to see if he gets an appearance at some point in the game, because defensive, he might be the best defender they have. John Morant's athletic. He's great on defense as well, but let John Morant try to push the pace. Let him get out in transition. He really needs to focus on the offense because they don't have too much offense when you compare him to this Blazer team. They just don't. Going over to the Blazers, the lineup's great. Terry Stotts has pretty much nailed it down to an 8-man rotation. Lillard, McCollum, Carmelo Anthony. I think Zach Collins gets to start at 4, but then Gary Trent Jr. comes in and gets heavy minutes to relieve either McCollum or Lillard. I don't know McCollum's status. I haven't looked. I'm assuming he's going to play through the fractured back, but if he doesn't, then obviously Gary Trent Jr. is going to plug right into there, and it's going to be huge for him because you're talking about a 50% three-point shooter in the bubble playing in, you know, one of the biggest games in his career. It's huge. They need a big game from Melo. 24-25 from Melo. Have to, or this could get real interesting because that Grizzly team is going to come out and fight, or at least we expect them to, right? They're going to come out and fight. They got to slow the game down. The Grizzlies got to make it a defensive game. And I think they'll have some success in that. I mean, Damian Lillard's going to make his shots, you know, but it can be interesting because these guys aren't proven. Gary Trent Jr. isn't proven. He's just been hot. Carmelo Anthony, I mean, big-time game for him. He's been playing well. We'll give him that, right? He's been playing well. He's had stretches, but he's also had stretches where he shot 5 for 15. Whiteside off the bench and Nurkic, I mean, I think that's where the game's ultimately going to be won, even if it is slowed down. Valanciunas is going to have success in the short role. He's going to hit some jump hooks. May even hit some post fadeaways when it gets down into it, but I do like Whiteside. Hertzonia could come off and shoot. Zach Collins could space hit and shoot. Nurkic, a great passer, great in a dribble handoff in his own right. Him and Lillard's dribble handoff is one of the most efficient in the league. Just like John Morant and Valanciunas, I've seen both teams obliterate good teams off that dribble handoff action, off defenders, you know, getting lackadaisical and going under. I think because we're all ready for playoff basketball, we want this to be a good competitive game. You know, we would like it to come down to the last couple of possessions in the fourth quarter. But without the Grizzlies having Jaren Jackson Jr. to space the floor, to put the ball on the floor as a 6'9", 6'10", power forward who's athletic and can play defense, I think it gets out of hand at some point. I don't know which quarter. It could be the first quarter. Blazers could come out, score 40. The Grizzlies could put up 25. 15-point differential. They're never recovering. They're not recovering from that. I don't think the Blazers, you know, let off of the gas at all in this game. If they do get an 8-10-point lead, just too good. One of the better eighth seeds that we will see in the league in a while. I'm trying to think of a more talented AC team. Maybe I think the Grizzlies were an AC seed and beat the Spurs the one year, or it may have been a 2-7. But the Grizzlies team, when they had Marcus Saul, Zach Randolph, Tony Allen, Mike Conley, Rudy Gay, that Grizzlies team, that if they were the AC seed, I could be wrong, but you know that it's that type of team. They're that good. One of the better offensive teams in the league that have rotational players that could do well. You know, we'd like CJ McCollum to be healthier if they go on to play the Lakers, but really, really good. And we can't fault the Grizzlies if they get blown out tonight. I think that's what everybody probably has the same mindset. Like the Grizzlies are probably going to lose by 13, 14. Natural. They're missing one of their best players in Jaren Jackson. They're a young team, and they fought hard all season. You know, they deserve to at least be in this position for sure. Give credit to the Blazers for putting themselves in this position too. You know, they win 8 out of 10 or something stupid? Like I said, Damian Lillard joins Wilt Chamberlain as the only other player to score 60 points 3 times in a season. You know, you got to appreciate greatness when you see it. I'm so excited to see this game. And, you know, just to show you how quickly this could get out of hand before we sign off, John Morant, we know he's young. He's a rookie. We're not going to expect him to take over multiple games right away or do the right things all the time or you know, make plays all the time. We see his flashes of greatness. We see his athleticism, and we're excited about what he can become. But this is a stat that scares me. He's only scored 30 points one time this season. 30 points one time, right? Damian Lillard is averaging 30. He's going to score 30 tonight. Might score 40 tonight. Might score 50 tonight. So, you know, with that said, I'm not sure how the Grizzlies find a way. I think if I'm Taylor Jenkins, I make it an emphasis to bang down low. Get Nurkic out. You get Nurkic out of there, things become a little bit different. But Valanciunas gets in foul trouble himself, so it's hard to say. It's hard to say. Brandon Clark on the bench, I didn't mention. He had like 34, I think, when they played last time or something, like something dumb. Athletic guy who likes jump hook shots deep in there, but I think he could shoot a little bit too. But like I said, I don't see how the Grizzlies keep up with this scoring pace that the Trailblazers are going to provide. You know, Terry Stotts, really good coach. I think he's going to keep this team focused from the first quarter through the fourth quarter, and that's what they need. And I think we're going to see Blazers and Lakers, you know, first round. That's just what it is, unfortunately. But thank you guys for tuning in. I'm so glad to be back. This is just the first of many. I'm gonna cover all the playoff series in the playoffs. A lot of games. I may just do you know, series predictions before and maybe after analysis, or maybe pick out key games. You know, I don't know if I have time to go game by game for every series. I just might. I'm that excited for sports to be back. But thank you for listening, and God bless. RG Sports Show here. We're talking playoff basketball. So excited to finally be at this point. Game one on Monday, we got the Nuggets against the Jazz, and this should get pretty interesting quick. A lot of moving parts going on. Let's get right into the lineup. Jamal Murray is back. Now in the bubble, he was gone for a little bit and then he came back, but he's been shooting particularly well. I think he can be even better. I'm sure Coach Michael Malone has prepped him to get to his spot, get comfortable, and he's going to have to give them 20-25 like we know he can. Torrey Craig is at the two, and if you don't know much about Torrey Craig, he came alive last year in the playoffs for the Nuggets, off the bench primarily, but a 3-and-D guy who could finish when you get out and run. Just a decent role player that fits into their offense well. Jeremy Grant at the three. He was a WIP work in progress for the longest time, and then boom, out of nowhere, the guy develops a jump shot and is now giving this Nuggets team 11 to 12 points a game. It'll be interesting to see if they rotate in Michael Porter Jr. a lot. He's been playing really, really well. They have an exciting young team. I really like the way they built this team and the guys that they're building around Jokic, which brings us to our four, Paul Millsap, who just continuously turns back the clock of time, game after game. You know, here's 17-8, here's 20-9. Just a guy that really does it all. Great passer, great defender, great rebounder. Can get his own shot in the low post if he has the mismatch, and we'll get to that later. And then finally at the five, Nikola Jokic. What can the guy not do as a five? And what's even crazier is he's averaging 29-9-12 against this Jazz team. Just insane, and it doesn't make sense because Rudy Gobert tends to drop his offensive shooting percentage, which makes sense because he's probably the best defensive center in the league, right? But nope, 29-9-12 for you every time they play, it seems like. Let's go over to Coach Quinn Snyder in the Jazz lineup. Jordan Clarkson is gonna be the X factor, really, not for just this game on Monday, but also the second game, because Mike Conley, his wife, went into labor and actually had the child. So, according to quarantine rules, I think he's got to be out the first two games, which is really big. I mean, that's a turning point in the series. He's a huge player, clutch player, has been one of the better point guards for years. Not saying that Jordan Clarkson is bad. He's just not of that stature. And we all realize that. So Jordan Clarkson at the one, Donovan Mitchell at the two, elite scorer, elite finisher, can play. I really enjoy watching him play because he can get out and run when he needs to, but he can also find his shot in the half court. And a lot of guys can't turn it up in those different scenarios. Like, there's either guys that like to get out and run, or there's guys who really like to look for their shot in half court. And he can really play both ways well. Joe Ingles at the three. This is where it gets interesting, because he might look to be their main setup man with Mike Conley out for these first two games. I've seen him run this offense before, especially pick and roll with Rudy Gobert, because they're both, you know, bigger to be doing that. I mean, he's 6'7", 6'8". Fortunately, I don't think he has the matchup advantage here against guys like Paul Millsap and Jeremy Grant. They play good defense in their own right. Then we have Royce O'Neal at the four. He's an excellent role player, good at shooting from the corner, get great energy, can rebound when you need him to. And then finally, Rudy Gobert at the five, with Ed Davis rotating in for Royce and Rudy. Ed Davis plays good for stretches, man, I tell you. But what really needs to be said about Rudy Gobert, probably the best defensive center in the league, protects the rim at all costs, just the backbone of defense. It almost seems like guys shade away and let them get to that point, and that's how they try to create their turnovers, because you're dribbling, you run into Rudy Gobert, and then you look to kick it out, and guys are in the lane. So just really, you know, they can be a pesky, tough defense when they're focused and rotating well. But let's get into our, you know, our key factors and things we need to look for when we're watching this game and analyzing it. The Denver Nuggets have to move the ball. That's their identity. That's what they're known for. And when they get 25 plus assists in a game, they're 31-10. What more needs to be said? Jokic could give you 10 assists by himself, right? Jamal Murray could give you 5 or 6. Now you're only 10 away. Paul Millsap could give you 4. So just an interesting stat, you know, 25 plus assists as a team, and they're 31-10. So that lets you know the Jazz on defense, and they got to try to make those guys play ISO ball. And I don't know if they're going to, you know, look to trap the dribble handoff action that Jokic, you know, he terrorizes defenses with that, because how do you defend that? You go over, you give guys like Jamal Murray the lane, and he's not really looking to drive a lot of the times. He's looking to seal and shoot that in-between shot, but Jokic is just so, it's the decision-making. It's not even really so much the action, but he forces people, you know, the defenders in tough positions, and guys like Jamal Murray are able to capitalize a lot of the time. So I wonder how Quinn Snyder's going to, you know, try to take that away when he can. It's way easier said than done. But they are the Jazz are the ninth defense in the league. They only allow 107 points a game, and what seems like a scoring bonanza this year in the league. But the Nuggets in their own right have the 11th defense when it comes for points per game anyway, right? They only give up 109. So we could see a tough defensive battle here. And I like Donovan Mitchell down the stretch more than I like Jokic. I really that's just my personal opinion. You give me two of the best shot makers from each team and a tie game, 25 seconds on the clock, you know, who am I taking from either team? I'm taking Donovan Mitchell. That's just me. He's just that gifted on offense. But Jokic, interesting enough, he's 11-8 this year in games decided by 4 points or less. You can't take that lightly. Hook shots, you can't, oftentimes these teams are in the bonus, so you can't foul him because he could hit his free throws. He could hit the mid-range shot. He could hit the three-point shot if it's pick and pop with Jamal Murray. So he's tough. He's tough. That's just, you know, that's what it is. But it's so important for Rudy Gobert to stay out of foul trouble. He has to give himself a chance to defend for 38, 39, maybe even 40 minutes, maybe even more. This game could go into overtime. He could creep into 45, 46 minute territory, and he just can't foul out. He can't leave his team hanging, and before you know it, it's Millsap and Jokic against Ed Davis and Royce O'Neal, and it's over. It's over with at that point. And one of the more important stats that I think really is going to decide the game down the stretch is who's leading going into the fourth quarter. The Nuggets are 35-7 going into the fourth quarter with a lead. Insane. I don't know if it's the offensive efficiency combined with the defense in those quarters. I didn't, you know, dive that deep into it, but just looking at it on paper, I mean, 35-7 with the lead, but only 9-20 without the lead. So the Jazz can give themselves a chance on defense. That's what they're known for, playing defense, you know, hitting the outlet pass to Joe Ingles, getting it up the floor, giving themselves a chance down the stretch, and letting Donovan Mitchell do his thing. He could very, very easily steal one of these two games. And I think that's the goal for Quinn Snyder is, hey, we're without our best point guard in Mike Conley. Can we make these games competitive and give ourselves a shot down the stretch? So I think that game's at 1:30. I look forward to it. And thank you guys for tuning in. RG Sports playoff basketball. We got game two on Monday. The Raptors against the Nets. And there's some weird things going on in this series, potentially. I looking at the stats, looking at what was going on in the bubble, it's easy to say, wow, this Nets team is just going to get overwhelmed with the mismatches that they're getting ready to face against this very good defensive Raptors team. It's easy to pinpoint that and run with that and accept that for what it is, but just a couple of quick things I wanted to point it out. I'm probably not going to make this particular series 10 minutes like the other ones because there's really not that much to be said. But we'll go into the lineups quickly. Kyle Lowry, obviously. Fred VanVleet. OG Anunoby. Great defender. Has improved his three ball. He's going to get the start at the three. And what at first would look like a small ball lineup until they get down to Marcus Saul, who's 7-1. But OG Anunoby at the three, not a lot of people know him. I like to mention guys like that because he's a great defender. And that's going to be important against guys like Caris LeVert, who's I think he was averaging like 27, 28 in a bubble. But Pascal Siakam at the four, he has to get comfortable because he has to get in a rhythm right now in this series to give the Raptors a chance moving into the next series. That's what this series is for, almost like a setup series. You know, when you think of championship teams, they often have that series that may even be close. It might go to six games, you know, seven games, but their best players tend to get into a rhythm. And Pascal Siakam didn't impress me in the bubble. They were like just missing tons and tons and tons of open shots, not being aggressive, and I guess that's expected when you know you're going to make the playoffs and these games don't really matter. Like, I get that aspect of it, but he has to get back to being a 26 points, 7 rebound guy, because without that, this Raptors team is essentially done. I'm not confident in Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet leading this team over whomever they play in the next series. And then Marcus Gasol just seems to be the staple of the defense, great facilitator in the offense, and then still a pretty decent post player in his own right, still can hit that post fadeaway from time to time. But one of the major things that jumped off the page for me stat-wise when looking at this matchup, The Raptors are on an 18-game streak of not allowing a 30-point score. Insane. Insane team defense, insane individual effort and individual defense. There's no other way to put it. Like, for 18 games, nobody has scored 30 points. Get your prop bets ready and bet whoever to go under 30, because I doubt it's going to happen, especially in the playoffs. And then I really don't know. Like, there's so many mismatches here. I don't know, like, who guards Pascal Siakam? Is it Joe Harris? I don't even know how to pronounce the power forward that's going to start for the Nets. It's like Radonis. No idea who he is. Haven't seen a lick of film from the guy, but I'm not really sure who guards Pascal Siakam. And then I'm not sure. I guess it's on Kyle Lowry to be aggressive against Garrett Temple, who's starting for the Nets. Just mismatches everywhere. I can't say it enough, but it comes down to the aggressiveness and getting into a rhythm. I don't really care if they sweep the Nets. I care about how well are they going to play. Is Pascal Siakam going to get into a rhythm? Is Kyle Lowry going to get into a rhythm? Is Fred VanVleet going to get into a rhythm? Is Marcus Gasol, you know, going to get used to being that initiator up top that he usually is? I think OG Anunoby is in the best form, and they don't expect much out of him. I guess that's the beauty of it. You know, he just has to go out there and give it effort and defense. But Lowry, VanVleet, Siakam, Gasol, they all got to get clicking, because I think we all expect them to win this series, hands down. I mean, no Kyrie, no Durant, and countless of other injuries, right? But I will give the Nets some credit where it's due. Weird offensive success in the bubble with this lineup. Ready? Garrett Temple, a savvy veteran who could shoot. Caris LeVert, your typical, like, Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker, gets in the space, can create his own shot, finishes well at the rim, just natural scoring machine, right? Joe Harris, who is shooting the three ball as well as any three-point scorer that I've ever seen, honestly. I mean, what's the stat that I've seen? 23 for 30 from downtown in the bubble. 23 for 30. So let him run wild in one of these games. It'll be interesting to see. Now, Radonis, I'm not even going to try to pronounce this guy's last name. It's like, I don't know, starts with a K. Y'all know who I'm talking about once you see the lineups, but he's predicted to start in there. I really don't know much about him. He could come out and shock the world, honestly. I don't know one thing about the guy. And then Jared Allen, staple of the defense, signature afro, love it, lengthy. He just has to stay on his feet. I think Marcus Gasol is going to out-vet him sometimes and head fake him, get him in the air, get him in a foul trouble, and then get him out of there, and then the lane's wide open. But a really good player. I think he was averaging like 16 and 10 in the bubble, which is really good, on top of Caris LeVert averaging like 30 in the bubble, right? So I do give the Nets credit where the credit is due. They can play in stretches. They can definitely score in stretches. And really, when we talk about Nets basketball, I think we're all just waiting to see Kyrie and Durant take the floor at the same time. So that's the second game on the slate. I want to say maybe like 3:34, but yeah, it should be interesting to see how these Raptors get going. So thank y'all again for tuning in. RG Sports Show, we're talking playoff basketball. Game 3 on the slate. I think it's around 6 o'clock or 6:30 Eastern or something like that. But Brad Stevens and them Celtics against Brett Brown and the Sixers. And I'm excited to watch this. I think there's so many different things that can go on. Celtics, I believe, are going to start off here as the favorite. But I really, really think the Sixers' size can change the way this series is viewed. I know everybody's just like, oh, you know, no Ben Simmons, you know, they're done, they're playing horrible, they're out of it, they have no shot against this Celtics defense that is gonna strap them and lock them down. But here's the thing, you can't teach size. You can't teach size. And that's what Joel Embiid brings. Now, granted, he has to stay healthy. Every report I read from him, he's getting like banged up every other game. It's the ankle, it's the wrist, it's the hand, it's the hamstring. He has to stay healthy. And if he could do that, they might be able to steal this thing. I really believe that because I don't know who defends him. When you look at the lineup that the Celtics have, right? Kemba Walker, we know what he could do. Absolute great scorer. Absolute filthy point guard. Jaylen Brown at the 2, 6'6". Right, 6'6", great defense, has improved the shooting from what I've seen. Gordon Hayward at the 3, 6'7", not really athletic, hasn't really been the Gordon Hayward from the Jazz that we once knew. Has spurts and flashes of that, though. Jason Tatum at the 4, and this is really a small ball lineup, right? Jason Tatum, I think, is 6'8", all around, just great player. You know, right? I think we used to view him as just a scorer, but this year he's taken his game to definitely heightened levels all around, right? Definitely, I mean, everybody just watches him drop buckets, but playing the four, you got to rebound, you got to push the ball sometimes, you got to make decisions. I like his game in general. Daniel Theis. It's crazy. I've had the opportunity to watch him come off the bench in a lot of games, but just to really see him transition to a starter, it's just not going to work. I just really don't think it's going to work. Great rebounder, but I just like seeing his name under, you know, Kemba Walker, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, and then Daniel Theis, right? That's kind of how I look at the lineups, but Getting back to what's really going to decide this. Now the Sixers won the series regular season 3-1. I don't know if people knew that, but they're already 5-point underdogs in game one here because Ben Simmons is out. And I honestly don't know how much that's going to matter. I mean, you lose size, you lose the crafty passing ability, you lose somebody who could push the ball in transition and then make the right play 8 times out of 10, 9 times out of 10. Somebody that's going to control the ball, somebody that's comfortable getting people to their spot, right? I mean, Shake Milton is starting at point guard for the Sixers, for Christ's sake, but all the other guys I like, it's like backwards, right? Like how I look at that Celtics lineup and I'm like, Daniel Theis at the end. When I look at the Sixers lineup, let's go opposite, right? Joel Embiid, Al Horford, Tobias Harrison, Josh Richardson. He could play. He could shoot. Great shooter, right? And then you have Shake Milton. Now, if Shake Milton plays really good, it's only going to help this Sixers case that I'm about to make. But who on the Celtics is guarding Joel Embiid? It's not going to be Jason Tatum or Daniel Theis. Is Taco Fall active? They might need him. I think they have Enes Kanter as well, but I mean they don't have anybody to guard Joel Embiid. So what do? You have to double team him. Al Horford can shoot. Tobias Harris can shoot. Josh Richardson can shoot. Shake Milton can shoot. So that's where it gets interesting for me. And then it wasn't only that. I had to look and scratch my head and say, wait a minute. Who's guarding Al Horford? Jason Tatum or Daniel Theis? I really think the Sixers can get down there and bang and have a lot of success. So, critical key to the game, right, is going to be pace. Now, when I looked at pace, I thought there was going to be a bigger differential than what there was, but there really wasn't. I think they're both middle of the pack, like 16 or 17, so they kind of play at a similar pace, but playoff pace is obviously way different than regular season pace. And what I mean by that is, are the Celtics going to look to get out the run? I think yes would be an obvious answer to me, but I'm not Brad Stevens. I don't know what the game plan is. On the outside looking in and looking at their lineup on paper, you see a natural speed advantage, right? I mean, Jason Tatum is, I would think, a lot faster than Al Horford. Daniel Theis, I would think, is faster than Joel Embiid, although Joel seems knee cover some ground sometimes, right? But I would think Jason Tatum what is going to be critical in getting out and running, right? But on the flip side to that, how good are the Sixers going to be in a half-court offense time and time again? Because slowing the pace down and limiting yourself to a one-and-done shot like a Joel Embiid turnaround or a Joel Embiid hook or an Al Horford hook, it's one-and-done, and then boom, the Celtics are getting exactly what they want, right? A rebound and a push with that speed advantage. So it's going to be interesting to see how these teams try to control the pace and play their style of basketball. Tobias Harris, I mean, he's big as well. Like, I don't know if Gordon Hayward can handle him. Like, who does Jason Tatum guard? I feel like maybe Jaylen Brown's the better defender than Gordon Hayward, even though he's 2 inches shorter, but he is long. So I feel like maybe Jaylen Brown slides down to Tobias Harris. They let Gordon Hayward try to chase Josh Richardson off of the three. Kemba stays on Shake Milton. And then I guess Jason Tatum is guard with the task of guarding Al Horford, which can be dangerous because Al Horford is absolutely great in the post. So who knows? Jason Tatum can get in foul trouble off of trying to guard Al Horford. And then that Celtics lineup gets kind of shaky. Let's not forget Marcus Smart could rotate in here and guard at pretty much anybody, right? I think he could take the dribble away from Tobias Harris. I think he could chase around Josh Richardson and X out Shake Milton. So Al Horford becomes a critical piece to the Sixers' success because I don't really know who guards him. And obviously, I have no clue who guards Joel Embiid. So just a game that I'm looking really excited to watch and see because there's so many question marks. I don't know, should be a good one, but thanks again for tuning in. RG Sports, playoff basketball, and the final game on the slate, Clippers against the Mavericks. And ironically enough, this was the game that I had the least amount of notes for. There's not really much to be said. I'm a Mavs fan, and it's probably going to be tough to watch my team get swept, but it is what it is. We're a young team. I'm excited about the future. We probably need one more piece. Going through our lineup really quick, Seth Curry, Tim Hardaway, Luka Doncic, Dorian Finney-Smith, and then Kristaps Porzingis. And at first I thought, maybe we'll have a size advantage with Kristaps, but they do have Ivica Zubac, 7-foot center who's really good at a lot of things. And while I don't think he's going to necessarily be able to handle Kristaps, I think he'll be able to do enough. And really, that's outside of Luka Doncic, that's really all we have, right? So on the flip side of that, I have absolutely no idea who guards who. I imagine Luka is either on Kawhi or Paul George. He may even slide down to Marcus Morris, though, but there's such a size advantage on all the rest of the positions. Like, we have nobody to guard Paul George or Kawhi, and I think Reggie Jackson can absolutely torch Seth Curry. Huge bench presence. Like, our bench really isn't good at all. Meanwhile, we got to go against the likes of Jamichael Green and Lou Williams and Pat Bev. And I don't know if Pat Bev is still injured, but regardless, like, their team and their bench is so much better than ours. There's just a huge talent discrepancy. And that, you know, that's the Clippers for you. I mean, they're championship favorites for a reason. I don't really know, you know, what problems we could give them that over the course of a game, let alone four games, would be sufficient enough to win. I don't know what half-court offense we really would have against them. I imagine Kawhi goes on Luka and tries his best to take that dribble away, which we know Kawhi could do. And then it's like, how many step-backs is Luka going to shoot? You know, how many post-fadeaways are we going to watch Kristaps Porzingis shoot? So really, there's really not that much to analyze in this game, other than to watch it play out. The really only hope we have is if they come out and shoot like 40%, and you know that could happen. We could steal a game because they shoot 40%, and we're one of the most efficient offenses in the league for a reason, you know, Luka and Kristaps. On top of, you know, Rick Carlisle being the offensive genius that he is, I'm sure he has sets for days, right? But when it comes down to actual execution, I just don't know how well we fend against this tough Clippers team, man. They're tough. Like I said, championship favorites for a reason. I'm definitely still going to be interested to watch, but I don't expect too much. And maybe that's how the players look at it. Like, yeah, we're going against the championship favorites, but if we go out loose and we go out and play our style of basketball, who knows, give ourselves a shot down the stretch. And that's one of the things that I always admired about Dirk Nowitzki, and obviously that's why I'm a Mavs fan, is because of Dirk Nowitzki, right? But he often said, you know, it wasn't about going on these huge runs and going up 12, 14, 16. It was about trying to play the best defense that you could play and giving yourself a chance down the stretch at the end of a game. And that's what I always appreciated. Like, that was, you know, one of the most honest answers you could have when it comes to basketball, you know, because basketball is a game of runs. But at the fine line, it's about getting a stop and getting a bucket, getting a stop and getting a bucket when it matters. And right now, we don't even have, like, I'm pretty sure we're definitely one of the worst defensive teams in the league. I watched the last Clippers versus Mavs game, and Paul George just obliterated us. Went over the screen, he shot the in-between shot, went under the screen, shot the deep three. So I mean, it is what it is. It is what it is. I know a lot of people are high on us to, you know, possibly upset this Clippers team, but there's such a huge talent discrepancy and then size discrepancy at major key positions, and then our bench is just not even close to what their bench is. So although I am excited about the buzz that, you know, my team creates as an underdog, I just don't really see it being that realistic down the stretch. Doc Rivers is going to get these guys to play, and Reggie Jackson is more interesting to me than a lot of people would originally think. Like, he is still quick with the basketball, and I don't know if his passion is back playing here, but just a different passion that he comes with. So you have Reggie Jackson applying pressure early, and then guys like Paul George and Kawhi just putting the nail in the coffin in key moments in the game. And when I say key moments, I don't mean like big shots at the end of a game. I mean, like, if they're up 10 points and we cut it to 7, Kawhi or Paul George hits that 3 to go right back up 10, or they hit 2 threes in a row to make it 13. And it's things like that that make a basketball game. So I'm excited because the Mavericks are back in the playoffs. So yay to that. We're a young team, a lot to look forward to. But I really, no expectations. Greg Popovich, no expectations going into this series. Just happy to watch and be a part of witnessing my Mavs back in the playoffs. So RG Sports again, and thank y'all for listening.